nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them is a culinary bummer.
Support for the In the Garden program here on KFSK is brought to you by The Flower Farm. Selling flowers by the stem, dahlias, snapdragons, sweet peas, and more. They're located out the road at 6 Rory's Road on Papke's Landing. Phone number for the Flower Farm, 772-3464.
Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure. But it's nothing the homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them.
And a good afternoon. It's 25 minutes before 3. And beautiful afternoon here in Petersburg, all around southeast. And I'm joined by Ed Byarski. Good afternoon, Ed. I'm Tom.
Hi, Tom.
How are you doing?
I am enjoying the heck out of this weather, and the hopeful forecast looks so good that it's unbelievable.
It honestly. It is. It's amazing we've gone into September like this.
Yeah, it is, yes. That month with the R in it doesn't... Well, anyway, we'll enjoy it while it lasts. And I've been planting and gardening and harvesting and actually working something to at least like to mention a bit of is protecting my crops, particularly fruits and berries, from bears that is my, yeah, they are the biggest problem. They are. The one I've seen is about 350 pounds. He's a big problem.
Black bears.
And black bears, yes. Well, then I've got a small boo-boo that's a brown phase, brown-haired black bear. So we've got both. And then I've recently talked to folks both out the road where they're farther up toward Burners Bay where their brown bears are sneaking down that way. And then Douglas Island across the channel from Juneau where I'm not sure if the bears are sneaking across from Admiralty or what exactly, but there are, I've heard, and last year there were a couple killed actually, 600 to 800 pounders, decent size brown bears, as attested to by Fish and Game.
Wow.
So I assume you in Petersburg, like here and elsewhere, there's lots of folks also having chickens or ducks, and that's another very attractive, tasty item for bears and just about everything else, too.
Oh,
eagles,
yeah, that's happening here.
And mink and marten and weasels and all of that. They take a little different fencing, really, really fine mesh fencing to keep those out.
Oh, yeah, we've definitely got a lot of chickens around here, and there have been some reports of brown bear on the island as well.
Yeah, great. So, truly, the best protection is an electric fence. Bears are well-grounded, having 4 bare feet, of course, and excuse me for that, but still having that, at least for those, we don't need a really high wires for those. Unfortunately, you also have the complicating factor of deer. So for those, I'm assuming more people probably use netting or some other sort of fencing. But what we have done, what we did in Juneau, knowing that we had deer and porcupines and bears, when we did fence the community garden, we put up a good quality 4-foot-high woven wire fence, you know, good sturdy stuff, livestock fencing, and then with steel posts. And then we added two hot wires, one that was 6 inches above the top of the 4-foot-high wire, and then one, and they make these extended insulators. Again, these snap onto the T-post, the steel post nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And that wire was halfway up the 4-foot fence, so that porcupines, thinking about climbing the fence, and they climb extremely well, they climb... among other things, chain link fences and chicken wire fences and everything else. But having that hot wire there helps deter that, helps deter the bears from going over the top. And at 4.5 feet high, I don't know about your deer, I suppose it depends on how hungry they are, but at least our deer don't jump that much here. Maybe you can tell me differently, and that might say you need a 6-foot fence to keep
them
out.
Well, they don't necessarily seem to have to do that here, so I don't think they.
Okay.
I think they seem to be finding their food without having to do huge
coming
leaps.
Walking through town and nibbling on everybody's
exactly.
Ornamentals and cabbages and other assorted stuff, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, growing up in the Midwest where we had white-tail deer, an 8-foot fence was just barely adequate to keep them out because
right.
they were tremendous jumpers.
Yeah.
But we're lucky in that regard. These are shorter deer here, shorter yeah. and tastier too. But getting the electric fence started, and again, to protect chickens, you know, you have the you start with a fence charger, small box, has no moving parts in it, that you can order. I don't know if some of your local retailers handle them, but certainly you can order them online quite nicely. And some, if you're in remote locations, they have solar powered fence chargers that usually have something like a 6-volt motorcycle type battery with them. That works very well also. The ones I have run on 110 power, so I just plug them in. I extend a power line or an extension cord to the edge of my orchard where I set up this charger. And normally they need to be, well, some of them are completely waterproof. And again, when you're looking at specifications, that's important if it's going to be out in the open. Some of them want to be at least covered with an overhang so they don't get hit directly with rain. Critical, probably the most important thing I've found over the years is that a good ground, so you drive a grounding rod into damp soil. I mean, yeah, most of our soil around here is damp if it's not wet, so that it has a good ground, usually 3 to 4 feet deep, to which the ground wire is attached, and then the hot wire from this charger is then attached to wires which are strung on the insulators on the fence posts. And all of that, I mean, folks can enclose a chicken coop or something, or a small garden, a few trees for $200 to $300. I mean, add another 100 to that and you can probably, the biggest expense becomes posts, fence posts, for that. So getting that electric fence set up, I have my bottom wire is about 15 inches above the ground, the upper wire is about 30 inches, and that's a good compromise for my four-legged pests generally. The other important thing for a fence is to make sure you don't let vegetation grow up, grass, weeds, twigs, branches, that sort of thing, grow up and touch the wire, because then it will ground out the fence,
yeah.
and it will not have the power, the shocking power that we want to keep the bears and other critters out.
So how high are it sounded like just 30 inches, is that?
Yes, my top wire, again, I'm primarily concerned about bears, and 30 inches is a pretty nice height for a pretty nice nose height for them. And I even do add a little something extra to help. Well, it's kind of help in the teaching process. I'll take some strips, a couple inch wide strips of aluminum foil, smear a little bit of bacon grease on those, and kind of fold them, wrap them up a little bit, and hang those on the fence wires to maybe help teach the bears. I've also done it where I'll take a half an apple. Take a piece of the fence wire, just run it through the apple, and hang that on the fence, so that they get they're very smart. You know, they learn quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get shocked by sticking their tongue out or their nose up to what smells like a good thing, that may deter them for the future.
Oh, I see. So you're drawing them in then, kind of.
Yeah, at least once. It may only be once, you know, if they
right.
become,
for them
if they associate that appropriately with them, that this is not a good choice.
Sure.
So what happened earlier this summer, one tree, well, I had a Saskatoon tree, and the bears, because we have relatively few berries this year and few fish in the stream, that there are hungry bears around. So they started with a Saskatoon tree service berry, which was loaded with berries, and they bent that over and stripped the berries off it. Then he came over to my apples in front of the house, and a tree that I'm assuming is probably the same bear pushed over last year and cleaned the apples off about this time of year, a little later. He pushed it over back in the end of July. Well, the apples weren't ripe, so he just left them. So I tipped the tree back up and went to get that section of fence up and energized. And now there's still apples. I mean, I'm sitting outside looking at some beautiful Williams Pride and Love's Queen apples, which would certainly be a bear attractant if not for that electric fence. And we've seen the bear. The bear's been in the neighborhood. He's been over to the neighbors and cleaned off their red currant and mine, red currant bushes, some of his apple trees. And there's others in the not too distant neighborhood that at the Jensen Olsen Arboretum has been closed because the bears are eating the mountain ash berries. That's a really attractive item for them also.
Oh, the red berries on the mountain ash trees.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And so there's enough in this, you know, the Arboretum is a park, and it's temporarily closed basically until the bears clean off the trees, clean the berries off them, and then it'll be safe again for folks to come and visit.
So then you know that your electric fencing is working then.
Yes, so I have a tester. So the little box, the fence charger, has an indicator, a little flasher on the little light that, and you can actually hear the snap, snap, snap. It's a 1 second, pulsed charge. There we go. Trying to think how to describe that. And so the light goes on and the charge goes through. If you were to hold on, you would feel the fence. The charge would be on and off, which is also a safety factor for humans, bears, whatever, or children, you know, if they happen to touch that they aren't going to be shocked and held on to hold on to it. It's because it's on and off, then they can let go. And I've got a tester also, so I can test from my ground to the hot wire to see that it's putting out a certain amount of voltage. So this little box essentially boosts the voltage but drops the amperage. So again, it's a safer overall for us and for critters.
Okay.
The strangest part of all of this is that slugs will climb the steel posts and go up to an insulator, and it's like they are attracted to the electricity.
Wow.
And they'll climb out onto the, I've got yellow insulators here, but you may see orange ones also, or black ones. Anyway, then you're walking around the yard, you'll actually hear the snap, snap, snap. When the slug climbs out and gets close enough to the wire that the spark arcs from the wire through the slug down the post into the ground, frying the slug, and then you've got to get a plastic spoon or something else plastic to scrape the dead slug off until the next one comes along.
So depending on your feeling of slugs, it can be a lot of satisfaction then.
It can be, yeah. I mean, there are not, I don't know too many slug huggers in the, you know, in my neighborhood. I don't know about yours, but
no,
yeah.
None.
So a few less is not a bad thing.
So they're actually climbing up, so it works on slugs as well then?
Yeah, exactly.
Fencing.
Yeah, well, I've been trying to think, okay, how can we use this, you know, appropriately in the garden, and I haven't come up with a way for that. But so there's an idea out there for somebody to make their, well, fame at least, if not fortune, to find the slug attracting, slug frying tool, and then, you know, I suppose serve them to the tourists with some good garlic aioli, perhaps.
Sure.
You know, we got to come up with marketing is important.
Yeah. Well, so it's it sounds. What about pets or anything? Any?
Well, again, yeah, we've got a little dog, and I know other folks with dogs too.
Mm-hmm.
So again, my little dog actually is small enough; it can go under the fence usually, except it depends on how high it's holding its tail. It actually goes in to try to get to the gooseberries. It'll eat gooseberries off the bush, which is inside the wire too. So occasionally I'll hear a yelp and an unhappy dog. So it learns too. But that's, it's really does work well. And again, I suppose if you've got, I know there's places where there's folks have stray dogs or aren't keeping their dogs in like they should be.
Yeah.
And, so this is a more active thing. If you, in general, if you're doing this in a residential neighborhood, you know, along with your supplies, getting the charger and the wire and the insulators, you can, you normally, you can buy, and it seems like a couple of them even come with the charger, little signs that you hang on the wire, that electric fence, beware, keep away,
sure,
or
yeah.
something to that effect. I'm sure, you know, that's because of too many lawyers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but anyway, it works. It works well, and if I'm not careful and I'm working inside, I've got a gate, so I've got little hook gates, spring-loaded gates, so I don't have to turn the fence off if I want to work in there.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I find it's better if I do, because otherwise, sure as heck, I will forget and back
to turn it
into
back on.
The fence,
yeah.
And that will remind me that I should have turned the fence off.
Right. So then, and so turn it off when you go in, turn it back, and remember to turn
yes,
it back on.
Exactly. That's important, because it seems like, I swear, well, I suspect they can sense it. So that if and certainly, you know, if the fence is left open or uncharged, that it's like they seem to know, and say, oh, here we go, it's time, you know, let's get in there quick before he remembers, you know, before it's too late the next morning.
Right.
And then the carnage is more visible.
Sure.
And because the bear did get into my lower orchard after I got the upper one done. My wife saw him walk down the driveway. She tried to chase him off, and he was not impressed. Walked down, he broke down some of my small, I've got semi-dwarf trees, so, and he's a 6 foot plus bear, 6 feet standing up looking at me, one day.
Wow.
So, 43 inches high at the shoulder, because when he walked past our Subaru, my wife took a note of how tall he looked, and then we measured it. So, 350 pounds, he just stands on his hind legs and just breaks branches down to bring the fruit of whatever sort to his own level.
Sure, and then just eats as well.
Yeah, so I've got some pruning, you know, pruning to do to clean up the mess that he left. And it'll be a reminder to get my electric fence up sooner next year.
Right. So then just turn it off once snow comes or something like that.
Right. Yeah, normally, you know, there's a fairly limited time period. So depending on what kind of berries and fruits you are growing, probably from, say, mid-July until perhaps mid-October. You know, there's some apples that are later ripening varieties, and so you just have to figure out what you've got until you finish picking them all.
Yeah.
So, and get them off the plant, off the tree, or off the shrubs, too. So, and then, yeah, then it's off during the wintertime. We don't normally have a problem with that. Unless there's a deer issue, perhaps, or you're trying to keep out or something like that.
Sure. Okay. Well, anything more, Ed? Anything else?
Well, the other thing, of course, people need to be thinking about, I'm not going to say the F word that's for the season that which is coming while we're enjoying this, but still, the days are getting shorter, and greenhouses are, with the weather, with this dry weather, it's nice because things are still dry enough not to have too much mold and mildew issues, but the mornings are getting colder. So the cucumbers, tomatoes, and other stuff that's in there is certainly slowing down. I've got tomatoes ripening nicely. That's a good thing. But I'm also going to start to pinch off the flowers and flower buds that are on the tops of these plants, because by this time of year, it's difficult to get them to pollinate and really difficult to get them to mature. Unless you have a greenhouse which is a double layer insulated and has extra heat and extra lights in it for once we get into the next couple of months, end of September, October, days get pretty short and it's more likely that we will have our usual weather as opposed to what we're having now. If this lasts, well, that's great. My tomatoes will be eating tomatoes into October and maybe later. But taking off those flower buds then means the plant is putting more of its energy into ripening the fruit that it has already set.
Okay.
And that, you know, and then you might look at if you're growing peppers, same thing would go for peppers if you're doing that, or eggplants. And then also, I've got cucumbers in the in the greenhouse. And so those two are slowing down. Certainly the plants are turning a little bit yellowish. So in fact, probably in the next couple of days, I'm going to be making, cleaning off most, if not all, of the cucumbers and making a batch of pickles. So that's always worthwhile. And, have a few more left to eat of the cucumbers. But again, they're more sensitive to the mildew and the cooling temperatures than tomatoes are. They'll hang on, the tomatoes will hang on longer, partly because there's sugar inside them and they can, that they don't freeze.
Right.
So get out there in the greenhouse and do some cleanup work and hopefully enjoy lots of tasty tomatoes. We're picking handfuls and have a bowl on the table every night. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, it sure is. We've been really lucky with the weather. So I've got a question regarding trees. If
okay.
This time of year, is it a good time to plant a tree?
Absolutely. Yeah, I just planted one earlier this week, and I've got just unloaded a pallet of some cherry trees and some arborvitae that will be planted here in the next few weeks. The good thing is the soil is pretty much as warm as we're going to have. Tree roots will be growing as long as the soil doesn't freeze, and that's likely to be late October or later. Who knows? We've got a, you know, the weather wizards are predicting El Nino maybe, which kind of sort of means, you know, warmer and wetter winter maybe. Again, we'll see how well they do on their prediction. But this is a good time of year for planting trees. The key, if you've got potted trees, loosen up the root system when you pull them out of the pots and into the ground. Definitely water. I mean, even, you know, particularly with this kind of weather, definitely water them until we get the really hard rains that are certainly coming at some point later in September or October, till Mother Nature takes over with that. Get your, if they have to be staked, if the trees are not very large and might not get knocked over or blown over, definitely get them staked. And really important is to mulch them well. So, and again, that will help. 2 inches of wood chips, bark mulch, over the root system will act as insulation, so those roots can grow longer into the fall, and then it will also slow the freeze-thaw action, so it doesn't damage the roots, which we had a lot of problem with from last winter when we had no snow cover and very cold weather. So we'll see how that shakes out this winter.
Okay, so you've got a couple of weeks because you want them kind of pretty much set before, you know, mid-October, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I have planted into November. I don't recommend it particularly, but if you've got trees and shrubs that are in pots, you don't have a good place to protect them. Better if you put them in the ground, even if you just dig a hole and drop the pot and all into it, but they'd be better off loosened up and planted appropriately where they're going to go, assuming that you know it. If you had, say, a pile of wood chips or bark or something like that, that you could bury them with, you know, set them on level ground and then mound that material up and around them, mm-hmm. again, to help keep the roots from freezing too fast.
Yeah. All right. Well, that makes sense. Okay. Well, Lars is here. Lars, do you have any question?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I was wondering, how do you know when your apples are ready to pick? Because the apples on my trees, they're the biggest they ever been. They're looking beautiful.
Oh, right.
But they
seem to keep
going stronger and stronger.
Well, good. So mine, now we just, my daughter was just up here last week. You got to get the rest of the story, too. And inside the electric fence was the one tree, the variety is called Liveland Raspberry. It's an old, old variety. And they were at the perfect stage. This is a green apple with just a hint of a red blush on it. They were still nice and tart, but had flavor. You know, we're tasting them. So that's what you should be doing, is tasting them to see if they are, whether you're going to be just eating them as is, or if you're planning to make pies or otherwise. So, my daughter and my wife and I, we picked all the apples off that tree got about 3/4 of a bucket full, 5-gallon bucket, and we made 11 pies.
Nice.
And plus some applesauce from all of those. It was incredibly good. Then I've got, so, but I've got other trees too that are not yet ready. And again, I'm tasting them. That sitting here, I see these Williams Pride is a variety, nice red apples. They're turning beautiful color with the sunshine. And the sun is also helping, make more sugars, helping the tree make more sugar for the fruit. Those probably won't be ready until the end of September, depending on the weather. The third tree in this section, the one that had gotten pushed over by the bear last year and this year, is my favorite for eating. It's called Lubsk, L-U-B-S-K, Queen, another old Russian variety. And red or green with a red blush on it. It's getting close. It's probably got about another week of before it's ready for eating. And there's only a dozen apples on there, so won't get a pie. We'll just have to eat them all. So get out there and taste them, Lars, and see when they're ready for your pies or sauce or yeah, your loved ones to eat.
There you go.
And then one last question. I just covered my strawberries up today because I figured it's going to start getting colder and the rain's going to come. How long can I expect those to keep producing?
Well, if you've got, you know, if you've got hoops and plastic, the limiting factor really is going to be day length. You know, our days are getting shorter. So even unless, yeah, well, if we get warm, dry weather, that would help, of course. But I certainly personally have, depending on what variety you have, it sounds like you must have a day neutral or an ever-bearing variety if you're still producing.
Oh, yeah.
I have had some, unfortunately, having big, seems like the berries get bigger later in the season, and I've had big green strawberries in October, and I have not, I have yet to find a recipe for anything to make with green strawberries.
Yes.
I don't know, maybe a chutney or something, perhaps, but if you come up with a recipe, let me know.
Yeah, they're still blooming away like crazy.
Yep.
I can't believe it.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, but yeah, if you can put a clear plastic cover over them and, you know, something that'll keep them a little warmer and definitely a little drier, that'll help, and hope for the best.
All righty.
All right, well, thank you, Ed. All right, thank you, Ed.
You're welcome.
Good discussion today.
Okay.
All right, talk to you next week.
All right, yeah, hopefully next week it'll be just as nice.
I hope so.
Maybe.
All right. All right, take
Thanks,
care.
Thanks, Tom.
Ed. Thank you.
There ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes.
In the Garden with Ed Byarski, supported by the Flower Farm out the road, 6 Rory's Road at Papke's Landing. They sell flowers by the stem, dahlias, snapdragons, sweet peas. You can get flowers delivered as well. 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing for the Flower Farm. Phone number 772-3464. It's 3 minutes after 3, and there's one more event coming up here shortly at 3:30 for the Tongass Rainforest Festival. It's a kids event, Fun with Fungi, and that's down at the Forest Service office downtown at the Ranger District office. 3:30 to 4:30 today. This is for kids. Fun with Fungi with Karen Dillman and Ron Hamill of the Petersburg U.S. Forest Service, and that is down in their district office on Main Street. And coming up this evening is the keynote address, Why Are Salmon Shrinking and What Does It Mean? Megan McPhee, a University of Alaska Fairbanks professor, College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, also a Salmon Forest film. The Salmon Forest film is about 30 minutes. It's a documentary that's all at the Wright Auditorium this evening at 7 o'clock. And you can get more on the schedule. The schedule is available online at akrainforestfest.org. And You can learn more about it on KFSK's website as well at kfsk.org. Tonga's Journal coming up next, and then Lars will be taking over. He's your host for the High Country this afternoon.